decided, why not exercise the same constitutional right they have to collect a signature by standing there and taking issue with it?
Paid protesters make the case against the oil tax repeal initiative. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 21st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Congressman Don Young supports immigration reform, but many of his Republican colleagues in the House do not.
Right now, I'm just watching what's happening. It may not even come to a vote.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
A well-known political operative is paying protesters to convince Alaskans not to sign an initiative petition to repeal the new tax cut on oil companies. Activists gathering signatures for the initiative say their workers are being harassed. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has the story.
If you've ever turned on the radio or television during the campaign season, you've probably heard an Art Hackney ad. He's done work for Congressman Don Young and the late Senator Ted Stevens, American Crossroads, the Republican State Leadership Committee, and Americans for Job Security have also been among his clients. Most recently, he's been putting out ads like this.
One pebble, and boom. There's a hole many times bigger than all mines in Alaska's history put together.
Hackney's been one of the key campaigners for a ballot initiative that could slow down the development of Pebble Mine, or block it altogether. But he's not against all resource development. Before that, he ran an ad campaign against high oil taxes.
Now, when Alberta, Canada lowered taxes, the oil industry plowed money right back into their economy. It's creating so many jobs, they're inviting Alaskans to move to Alberta. Call your legislator. Ask them how tripling taxes can get results like that.
Now, Hackney is fighting Pebble Mine and an effort to repeal a tax cut on oil companies at the same time. Instead of going through the airwaves, he's doing it on the streets. He set up a company called Alaska Resources, and he's paying a half dozen people $15 an hour to go protest locations where signatures are being gathered for the oil tax referendum.
We just decided, why not exercise the same constitutional right they have to collect signatures by standing there and taking issue with it?
Organizers behind the oil tax referendum learned that Hackney was behind the opposition effort just recently. And they believe that Hackney's team has gone beyond their constitutional right. And what they're doing is intimidation. Earlier this week, the coordinators of the Yes Repeal the Giveaway referendum said they were being verbally and physically harassed. On Thursday, they ended up calling the police to the Anchorage Barnes & Noble when a member of Hackney's team came to discourage people from signing their petition booklets. They need over 30,000 signatures to get on the ballot. Pat Lavin manages a referendum group, and he compares what Alaska Resources is doing to stalking. He calls the situation deeply troubling.
Of course, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and that's great, but when it comes to paid, determined interference with signing a petition booklet, that's different.
Hackney denies that they're interfering with the signature gathering.
It's absolute crap. I mean, it gets reported on, and they full well know this simply because they make the allegation.
He says that while his group is targeting locations where referendum organizers have been setting up shop, they're not harassing the signature gatherers.
They make it very clear to all of the people who come up that they have every right to sign that petition, that those signature gatherers have a right to be there, and they have a right to make a case that what they're saying is not true and that the oil tax referendum is a bad thing for Alaska and for jobs. And I'm very, very proud of them all. I think they're comporting themselves very nicely.
The Anchorage Police Department investigated the referendum organizers' claim that Alaska Resources interfered with their constitutional rights and couldn't find any evidence that any laws were being broken. Danny Myron is a spokesperson for the Anchorage Police Department, and she says they'll keep monitoring the situation.
If there are concerns, if there's suspicious activity, if there's any criminal activity, then we would hope that the parties involved would contact APD so that we could respond and address that activity.
Hackney says he plans to keep running Alaska Resources until the signature gatherers hit their July 13th deadline, and that he's willing to put $10,000 of his own money toward keeping the referendum off the ballot. Alaska statute doesn't require them to publicly report any of that spending. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
In the coming weeks, the Alaska Redistricting Board will be reviewing seven different political maps on top of a handful that have been submitted by third-party groups. Today, the board unanimously agreed to consider all of them. There aren't many common themes in the maps. At the board meeting, Chair John Torgerson noted the board had many choices in how much they wanted to change the political boundaries.
There are some strikingly similar districts, and then there are some that are totally different. Totally many options that are contained in all those.
Alaska had to use an interim map last election, and the redistricting board only started working on new boundaries 2 weeks ago. They had been waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on a Voting Rights Act case, which would have affected the way lines are drawn. But that decision hasn't come out yet, and earlier this month, a judge in Fairbanks criticized the board for delaying the process and ordered them to begin work immediately. The first public meeting on the maps will be in Anchorage on June 28th. In early July, the board will also hold meetings in Fairbanks and Juneau. Some of the most controversial districts used in the interim map were in those regions. There's growing optimism in the Capitol that the U.S. Senate will pass an immigration reform bill soon. A late breakthrough yesterday on border security could shore up more skeptical Republicans. The bill would spend tens of billions of dollars on Border Patrol agents, drones, and technology to quell illegal border crossings from Mexico. As the momentum gathers steam on one side of the Capitol, people are starting to shift focus to the House, where there is no bill. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Representative Don Young says it may stay that way.
Don Young is sensitive.
The term illegal bothers me.
So he supports a shorter path to citizenship for future immigrants. He thinks 4 years is plenty of time for a person to successfully navigate the immigration process, including background checks, applications, and approval. As for the 11 million people living in the United States illegally, he says they need to wait until all current pending legal applicants finalize their process. People call that moving to the back of the line. That's the plan in the Senate version of the bill, and most expect that to take a dozen years. But Young says few of his Republican colleagues agree with that. He calls the Senate bill dead on arrival in the House.
Right now, I'm just watching what's happening. It may not even come to a vote. That could happen very easily.
Speaker of the House John Boehner makes that abundantly clear.
I don't see any way of bringing an immigration bill to the floor that doesn't have a majority support of Republicans.
On Thursday, 170 of Boehner's Republicans voted against the farm bill, issuing him the latest rebuke. It failed, and now he's scrambling to shore up support from his members. The Senate immigration bill will not get the majority of his Republican conference on board, so it's possible the House will bring up its own measure. Young says it will come piecemeal instead of as a comprehensive plan. Young voted against the last successful overhaul that legalized millions of illegal immigrants in 1986. He says he liked President George W. Bush's attempts that would have created a guest worker program.
Because they're not coming up here to sit around. They're being employed. They're being very helpful in the structure of our country. They're doing work that some of the people don't want to do. If we were to say, like some people say, well, we'll deport them all, I think the country would probably collapse.
That argument is the loudest one being offered in the House. 2 weeks ago, Republicans in the House voted to resume deportation of the children of illegal immigrants. Congressman Young skipped that vote. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Anchorage woman makes the jump from homeless to homeowner.
I didn't really know I had a choice about the alcohol and drugs. Everybody did it, you know. It was a part of our life. It was normal.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Share your culture and create lifelong connections by welcoming an AFS International Exchange student into your home for a year, semester, or 6 to 12 weeks. Information at 1-800-AFS-INFO. This message sponsored by AFS USA.
The Alaska Interagency Fire Coordination Center is reporting dozens of new wildfires in the state. Most of the new fires are in the interior, where State Information Officer Pete Buist says recent hot, dry, windy weather has been followed by lightning.
Thursday evening, we had nearly 5,000 lightning strikes statewide, and we got 37 new starts yesterday. And many of those got fairly large right off the bat, and that's a reflection of the dryness that we have from the weather over the last week or so.
Buist says there are 70 active fires in the state. A few are threatening populated places and being fought, including the 78,000-acre Lime Hills fire near Lime Village in southwest Alaska, and a new blaze that started near Anderson off the park's highway. The majority of the current fires, which range from less than an acre to several hundred acres in size, were started by lightning. Fairbanks and other areas are getting some light rain showers today, but more hot, dry weather is forecast for the beginning of next week. The National Park Service has banned all campfires in Wrangell St. Elias, and similar bans are in effect on federal lands in southwest Alaska. A snowshoe hare has tested positive for tularemia in Fairbanks. The sick animal was found by a member of the public who brought it to a local vet where it died. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is warning of the seasonal disease, which is transferred by direct contact and ticks. Pets and people can also get tularemia and die if not properly treated with antibiotics. Fish and Game wildlife veterinarian Dr. Kimberly Beckman reports numerous calls about sick hares, which appear lethargic and unafraid.
Just turned on my computer and now there's a report of some sick hares down in Delta Junction. What surprises me yet is that we haven't had any reports of sick dogs or cats with tularemia, because that usually starts quite soon after we get the reports of sick hares.
Dr. Beckman cautions people to use gloves if they come in contact with diseased hares, notify Fish and Game, and dispose of the animal in a sealed plastic bag. She advises getting in for treatment quickly if you or your animals display signs of sickness, which include a high fever and flu-like symptoms. The majority of chronically homeless people in Anchorage are Alaska Native, and most of them are from northern and western Alaska. That's according to new data gathered by researchers with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation during a one-day survey. They say the new data validates anecdotal evidence, and they hope it will be used to create more culturally relevant programs to get the homeless off the streets and into stable housing. One Inupiaq woman who's been homeless herself is a model for how that might work. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports.
The Midtown Anchorage street where Wanda Conley lives is lined with rows of beige duplexes that look just like hers. But to her, the place is special.
Good morning. Yeah, I like the lightness, you know. I like the yellow paint and the windows. It makes it really light here.
Conley, a mother of three, used to be homeless. She says she took her first drink at five.
My dad gave me my first drink when I was five. My brother would make him drinks, rum and coke, and he messed up the quantity, got them confused, and it was more rum than coke. And my dad was like, whoever drinks it on, get $5 between me and my brother and sister. And, you know, I drank it.
Conley spent most of her childhood in a northern coastal village. She didn't want to give the name because she didn't want to further stigmatize the community. She says alcoholism and abuse were commonplace in her home.
I didn't really know I had a choice about the alcohol and drugs. Everybody did it, you know. It was a part of our life. It was normal. The abuse, it was normal too. I mean, looking back now, you know, not everybody wakes up to your mom stabbing your uncle in the leg. You know, they were drunk at the kitchen table.
She was drinking steadily by her teens and using drugs. Soon she and her three kids were living on the streets in Anchorage. That was January 1995. Melinda Freeman runs Homeward Bound, a supportive housing complex for chronically homeless people that's part of RuralCap. She says Conley's story is unfortunately not unusual in Alaska.
We have a very high rate of social problems such as sexual assault, child abuse, and many of the social ills that often at the heart of that is alcoholism.
Freeman says many homeless people come to Anchorage from a village for one reason or another and get stuck here. Around 70% of the 700 or so homeless people surveyed say they're Alaska Native. Many are from rural villages. Chris Duncan with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation hopes the new data can be used to develop more culturally relevant strategies to end long-term homelessness in Anchorage. The city has a plan to do so by 2019.
Well, certainly as we are formulating a program or response, it's not just about homelessness, but this is the trauma of going from a long-standing rural lifestyle to that of a more urban-centered lifestyle. And so a certain degree of sensitivity toward that and assistance with that transformation then can help achieve housing stability.
Housing stability is something that Conley never thought she'd achieve, but through treatment and stable housing, she began to unravel her own trauma and to receive the therapy she needed. She says she believes trauma was at the root of the substance abuse which led to her homelessness.
My mom was abused. Her grandfather, you know, my appa, I don't know the trauma he went through. It was when Western people were going up north and all that they bought and the diseases. You know, it is generational.
Conley spent about 5 months on the street back in 1995. Her kids went to live with family while she got treatment, but it took several tries to get sober and clean.
When I got called on my stuff, like, why are you here? Why aren't you working the program? I had to take a look, a real hard look at why I couldn't get it. And it was because I didn't believe I was worth it. I knew my kids were, but I wasn't.
But she says she realized she was worth it. In treatment, she began to rebuild her self-esteem. Then she reunited with her kids. Last year, she bought the duplex in Anchorage. And today she works as a case manager at Homeward Bound, helping the people whose shoes she was once in. She says reconnecting with her own Alaska Native culture played an important role in her recovery. She says it also helps her clients at Homeward Bound.
The joy they feel when they're eating muckduck or, you know, caribou soup or moose stew, it brings back memories of when they were in the village living off the land and, you know, the good stories from back then. You know, but again, there's the generational trauma, you know. A lot of their history in the village has trauma.
Conley says reconnecting with the positive elements of Alaska Native culture is good, but she also says better funding for safe, stable housing, mental health services, and alcohol and drug treatment are critical for addressing homelessness in Anchorage, whether you're Alaska Native or not. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Annie Feit. This week on AK, canoe paddles. Remember the Tlingit paddlers who lost their canoes on a recent journey through Southeast? High winds and rough seas capsized the watercraft, dumping hand-carved red cedar paddles into the ocean. The canoes were found, and later, some of the paddles. They had a homecoming of sorts a few weeks ago in Yakutat, where they were made. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the story.
A half dozen students sit and stand around a workbench in the Yakutat High School shop. They're in a youth arts program that's part of the community's annual Turn Festival. Each holds an angled cedar plank, rough cut into the shape of a ceremonial dance paddle. A pile of raw boards sits on the bench, surrounded by dark, dusty pieces of crumpled sandpaper. While an adult volunteer uses a power tool to remove the roughest edges, the teens smooth and shape each piece by hand. Ninth grader Jasmine Long already has some experience.
They had a canoe trip recently over to Wrangell, and I helped them with those paddles, and I enjoyed it so much, so I thought I'd come back and do these ones.
Any thought to the imagery, what you're going to paint on?
I was thinking about an eagle. Since that's my moiety, I was going to think about doing that and a bear.
Watching the work is Doug Chilton, who led the paddle carving effort for the Wrangell Journey.
This is an introduction stage for the next generation.
The Juneau-based master carver, who's also the festival's featured artist, moves in to advise the students. Then he steps back, letting them get a feel for the wood on their own.
There's many different uses for them. These ones are little miniature dance paddles. You know, introduce them to the actual usable paddles that we can use, and then I can get them in a canoe. And that's where I'm at. That's what I love doing.
Chilton is president of the One People Canoe Society, which promotes the traditional mode of travel along with cultural awareness and community building. The recent canoe convoy from Juneau to Wrangell helped celebrate the rededication of the community's Chief Shakes Tribal House. That put Chilton and some others in the midst of some very rough seas.
Bad weather's bad weather. We'd get inside the safety boat, try to make sure everybody's inside where it's safe, and we just kind of keep an eye on it through the window.
Two canoes and a couple dozen paddles were lost to the wind and waves.
And there's not really a whole lot you can do other than just be sad. You know, and it was pretty quiet there for a while after the canoe broke loose. And you know, once it went over, we knew the paddles were gone.
It was heartbreaking. Our spirits got lowered quite a bit.
Cynthia Peterson is business manager for Yak Tat Kwan, the native corporation that co-sponsors Turn Festival events. She watches over the sanding students as she talks about being on board the ill-fated Yakutat canoe.
A lot of us thought that our ancestors gave us so much to begin with, that they were just taking our paddles as part of it. And for eight of them to get returned when we had eight paddlers on the journey from Yakutat was amazing.
And there the paddles are, one broken and others battered, laid out together on a nearby shop workbench. Chilton walks over to the pile.
This is one of the paddles that was returned to us, and you see how the edges busted off. The fish and game officer that brought these to us said they had to wait for this one because there was a bear chewing on it.
More than a dozen Yakutat paddles are still missing, but those recovered still have some time in the water. Chilton and others in the One People Canoe Society head to Washington's Olympic Peninsula later this summer for what's called the Intertribal Canoe Journey and Potlatch. After that, the paddles return to Yakutat and the sponsors who helped fund the Wrangell trip.
It's interesting, you know, they went on their own journey, you know, and they came back.
Back at the sanding bench, student Jasmine Long continues smoothing the edges of her ceremonial paddle. Are you involved in the youth dance group?
I've been going to the practices and everything, been trying to get back into it.
So can you look at the piece of wood and kind of think this is something I'm going to use in a dance?
Yeah.
What's it feel like to be making your own?
It feels good.
For AK, this is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Yakutat.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the village of Napakiak, near Bethel.
Samuel Robertson, and I come from Napakiak.
When I go to Napakiak, it's mainly to visit family. It's kind of small, but not really. There's maybe close to 200 to 300 people, almost. and there's about two main stores, the Jung store and the Pawcat Corporation store. What they mainly do in the summertime is they go fishing, or the kids and some of the young adults, they go to the school, because outside the school is a wooden basketball court, and that's where they what they mainly do is play ball. This coming weekend, I'm going to be help putting up fish in the smokehouse to bring back home. First, we fillet the fish, and then after we fillet the fish, we make precise cuts on the filleted fish, and then we hang them up to dry. Some people, they brine it in salt and then hang it up, or they just light a fire in the smokehouse and let the fish get smoked. I used to be a native dancer, and so what happens is it's a good way to get exercise during the winter time, and not only that, but it's peaceful and relaxing. A dance could pretty much be about anything. It depends on the composer, but some of the songs that I know of is like a blessing song, or a song about dinnetting, a song about the native drums.
Samuel Roberson is from Napakiak. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ed Schoenfeld, Alex Duer, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Annie Feit.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Summer is a great time to schedule your child's checkup. This yearly visit lets you ask questions, track your child's growth, development, and overall health, and make sure your kids are up to date on their immunizations. Denali Kid Care and most insurance plans cover these visits, available from health care providers across Alaska. Students starting school in Alaska for the first time need a physical exam. So make your appointment for a well child checkup today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.